This is Nick. You've been listening to the DU football show, Drunkards United. Of course, up the Blades and fuck the Owls.
Well,
bye-bye.
You know, if all works out well on Saturday in the championship, he will get his wish because there will be a Sheffield Derby back happening in the league again.
Yep.
Much like Kenny Glenn's got potentially a South Coast Derby to look
forward to. The original real South Coast Derby.
If everything doesn't go well for him, that's how it's going to end up. But we're safe, and that's all I care about. Let's start the show.
Born in the land of Bowie, Maryland. Bred to be a fan of fucking Everton. Punch you in the eye and drink your rye. Sam Houston? Arsenal fans have another Sam. Great day, the fucking Gooner Graham. Stump of a lord, look straight in shorts. Sam Graham! Fucking United!
Hello and welcome to the DU Football Show, a completely biased recap of the English Premier League is told by two common American schmucks. I am your host, Sam Houston, and across the way from me
is a man in his happy place.
A man in his happy place, and also a man that, you know what?
He's just disheveled over there.
Wildlife, nah, not so much. My co-host, Mr. Samuel Graham. Sammy, how you doing, good sir?
Yeah, I'm like that Drake meme. Wildlife, gin binge.
Yes, very good.
Yes, please. And that's why I look disheveled. I'm basically like Victorian England, which is why they banned it a long time ago.
Hey, we got to remember the Brewer's Alley and the gin lane, the two photos
yeah.
of the Brewer's Alley where everybody's all happy and celebrating and having a great time. And then it's like the gin lane and everybody looks like they're like on fentanyl.
Yeah.
Like there's like a mom like breastfeeding a baby, but dropping it like as she's passed out drunk. It's fucking, oh my God.
Good times.
You want to talk about a Surgeon General's warning? The gin lane photo is that incarnate.
Yeah.
That's for damn sure.
Oh, the good old days.
We're recording at the DU Public House just outside the nation's capital. You can check us out wherever you get your podcast. And of course, streaming live every single Monday night. Should you want to chat with us, there's many ways that you can. Mr. Graham, tell the good people how they can get in touch.
Absolutely. It's at DU Football Show on all the social media and DUFootballShow@gmail.com to get in touch via email.
Very good. Some quality bands in the closed group this week,
yes,
too.
Yes, there were.
Very quality. I love
it. Some decent memes shared, as always.
Going back to Kenny, when someone had put up the photo of the bellman from Pompey. Everybody's putting in all their stuff, and I talk about how much we really enjoyed our time down there to see a match in the midweek. And Kenneth, being the proper rival that he is, was like, trash people.
Yeah, just all he said.
Yeah, just all he said, trash people. And I was like, well, dude, if you don't do what you're supposed to do in the playoffs, there'll be a proper South Coast Derby. And he's like, I'm already preparing myself for disappointment.
Yeah, that'll be the only two games Pompey win next year.
Sam and myself both work in the wine and spirit industry and both have a deep, passionate love for all things distilled spirits. So as the red-blooded Americans we are, we've had to have a drink in our hand throughout this show. And every single show, boys and girls, the gin binge continues. And this is one of yours, Mr. Graham. Tell us all about it.
Yes, it is. Obviously, on Thursday, the gin binge started. However, we weren't together, so we drank stuff we already had. Because I like to kick off the gin binge with the new Hendrix release every
year.
For the last few years. So this one is no different. This is the Hendrix Grand Cabaret. This is a gin with natural flavors distilled and bottled in Scotland, as always, from the Cabinet of Curiosities. The key thing to note with these is that they use the regular Hendrix gin distillate, and they infuse it afterwards with the other things that are in it.
Okay.
This is 86.8 proof. From our Cabinet of Curiosities.
Real quick before you read the description.
Yep.
Would that then, they're doing like the maceration, like where they're doing like the tea bag and kind of just soaking those botanicals into the gin then?
Yeah, but they're doing the same thing that they do, the rose petal and cucumber. So it's normal Hendrix gin.
Got it.
That's then infused again with the other stuff.
Fabulous. Very good.
And I believe it's actually a distilled gin.
Mm-hmm.
Not a... Yeah, it's a distilled gin. So all of your botanicals to make the gin itself are in the pot.
Okay, in the pot, okay.
Yeah, not the, the sachets are in the pot with the liquid.
Got it.
They're not as soaked afterwards.
Instead of being in the box, mm-hmm. they're in the wash. Very yep. good. Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about it in a second. There's a bunch of different ways you can make gin.
Yeah, for sure. Created by master distiller Leslie Gracie, Hendrick's Grand Cabaret is inspired by a 17th century fruit-based libation known for its odd tendency to show up at the liveliest of parties. This limited release is crafted with a sense of untamed exuberance and poetry. Its sensuous cabaret of flavors will seduce your taste buds with... All right.
Excellent cold reader.
Oh, pirouettes.
Uh-huh.
It's in italics, uh-huh. and it looked like privy something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, pirouettes. And decadent stone fruit and shimmers of sweet herbs. Utterly refreshing with tonic and a slice of cucumber.
I get a lot of grape off of this.
Really?
A lot of grape.
So I would let more peach on the front and mm-hmm. then mid-palate like red fruits.
Okay.
Like strawberry, blueberry, yeah. blackberry.
It's juicy. It's fruity. It's...
And then, but it almost has this like kind of rosemary or thyme kind of undertone at the end mm-hmm. that I really enjoy.
And what tonic water did we do with this?
I could see a little bit of grape there too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Fair enough.
Like this little Thompson red grape, like a big fat juicy grape. Yeah. What I get to it.
This is the Q Drinks light tonic water because mm-hmm. it has a little citrus undertone to it as well, and it's bright and red. It wouldn't overpower the gin. I was worried mm-hmm. about the gin being taken over by too much quinine in this case.
Oh, absolutely. Would have been the
so
case.
I went for not diet tonic water, but a light tonic yeah. water, if yeah, you
not
will.
As, not as impactful with
exactly.
the quinine. Now, for gin, just kind of a brief little summary to talk about it some. Gin and vodka are distilled at over 190 proof because the idea of what you're doing is you're taking whatever the base grain is. In a lot of instances, it's corn because corn is cheap.
Yep.
Right. And what happens is you take that base grain and you distill it to a point where it is devoid of flavor, aroma, and And there's one other thing.
Color, probably.
Color, yeah, it's clear.
Something.
Well, everything that gets distilled is cleared. But it has no smell, it has no taste. That yeah. is the key thing to know, is that it is literally alcoholic water. And that's referred to as grain neutral spirit, or GNS.
Right.
Differences between vodka and gin. Vodka, if you're going to add a flavor to it, in most instances, they then just add the essence of that flavor. They can do it with sugar or whatever. Like if you're making, say, a cheaper vodka, a less expensive vodka, like say a Deep Eddie or
Smirnoff.
You're normally using sugar in that instance. If it's a higher end vodka or a more high price point vodka, say like a Grey Goose, they're normally using like an orange peel essence
and doing like a maceration, and then
so slightly different in that.
So like Hendrick's, what they do with regular Hendrick's is they soak the water they use to cut the gin down to mm-hmm. proof. They soak with cucumbers and rose petal. Right. So that essence of cucumber and rose is there, but it's not a dominant flavor, right? Right? You still get the botanicals that come through on the gin. So there are multiple ways to make gin.
Well, that's the one thing I wanted to kind of get to real quick before you got to that. And by all means, take it away after
go
that.
Ahead.
Is the idea of what gin does in difference to vodka is that vodka kind of just adds its flavoring after the fact. Gin will basically, they infuse it into the distillation process. Now there's multiple ways of doing it, and there are some where they like very very inexpensive gin, say like Naughty Head would do something called a compound gin,
right,
where they do what vodka does, is they take basically a syrup or an essence and they add it to the grain correct. Neutral spirit. But beyond that, Graham, please continue.
So there's that way, the compound gins, mm-hmm. Which is still a legal way to produce gin, one must say. Also, the only botanical you need to be gin is juniper. So all gins mm-hmm. have juniper.
Has to have juniper.
Has to have juniper. But there's a lot of, there's no legal amount of juniper that you have to use. So Hendrick's kind of invented, which is why I like to begin the gin binge with it, because it's the granddaddy of New World gin, even though it's made in Scotland,
right.
is they were one of the first gins to tone the juniper down and kind of create this new craft gin, got away from like the Beefeater, Tanqueray, mm-hmm. Juniper heavy kind of bulk gins, if you will, you know, kind of mass produced bulk gins. First real craft gin and kind of created the category, which is why everybody compares herself to him. Any gin that comes out, say, we want to be next to Hendrick's on the shelf.
Right.
In any shelf schematic we ever get, blah, 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 blah.
Right. Unless they are a London Dry style and then they want to be next to Tanqueray.
Exactly. But so anyway, with Hendrick's, they also, they use that essence water to cut it down, but they also, the sachets, there's two ways to do gin. There's an actual gin still that has what they call the gin box off to the side of the neck of the still where those botanicals are in that. So as the vapor goes up from the pot, it passes through that gin box, collects those flavors and continues on.
And then condenses back into liquid
and blah, 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 blah. Right. So that essence of those flavors and those botanicals are infused directly into the vapor and go with it. There is a way that you can put sachets, like giant tea bags, of these botanicals in with the wort and distill it, like infuse the wort as it's in the still.
And then you could also do a seeping, which is like essentially a tea bag.
Exactly.
Or an herb bag that you do, say, like when you make like a sauce and you do a bunch of herbs and you throw it, you could do that as well.
Or like a broth, yeah.
Right, same idea. So
it comes with the distillation process as well, and you don't have to necessarily infuse anything afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's a basic way that gin's made.
Very light, very lovely. Smart play with a very calm tonic.
Yep. I wanted the gin to stand through because I thought it was totally unique, especially with a bit of fruit flavors, but not being fruit, like not being a flavored gin,
Yeah.
Because I do have a couple of flavored gins that we're going to play with over the next couple of weeks as well. I got that Warner's from England.
Fabulous.
From Nottinghamshire, where Northamptonshire, where Shaq's team is.
Northampton Town. Very cool.
They have a farm there. They grow all their own botanicals. Fabulous. They're excellent.
Love that. The other fun thing to do, too, with a gin like this, what I would do, is do an infused seltzer water and not even introduce a tonic to it. So like do a cucumber water with seltzer. So you have the fizz because you want the bubbles is what you want. You want that fizz to it. But that would totally stand up with this gin as well because it's a very, very light, sweet gin, but it's quite lovely. I really am impressed.
It's fucking delicious.
All right. What else should we always do, Mr. Graham?
Always remember to drink responsibly, everybody. Why
kinda,
we always thud like that?
Kind of shitty all the way around. None of them were particularly good there, Mr. Graham. You know what was good? North London Derby.
You're goddamn right. It was.
We open with the top of the table, and it's all about the North London Derby. Arsenal 3, Tottenham 2, Manchester City 2, Nottingham Forest 0. Insane game and an insane kind of frantic start to the match.
It was pretty wild. Tottenham had loads of chances very early on with Christian Romero being their best player.
The really header weird. Off the post.
They had a couple of headers. Yeah. One was saved by Raya, one went just high, and one went off the post. And then he actually scored later on. Was pretty interesting from them, really. But Arsenal finally kind of grew into the game and got a hold of stuff and took their chances, right? They obviously, the first goal was the Højbjerg own goal,
right?
Straight from a corner. But it was wonderful play by the Arsenal in general. The kind of run across his face, which put him off, and just, I got to get something on this, and then bang, it's in the back of his own net. Unlucky on him, but fantastic for us. But it wasn't without his controversy either, of course, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have was it Kulusevski that was cutting in, and then clipped by Trossard. He wasn't trying to clip him; he was trying to actually go around the other side of him to help defend.
Right.
It appeared on the replays that he clipped his heel. Like I said, it was obviously not intentional. I've seen them called. I've seen them not called.
That's precisely what I was about to say. You see him called, and if it was called, you'd be like, damn, that was soft. And when it's not called, you go, yeah, I mean, I could see why they didn't call it.
Yep.
You know? I like the way that the commentators essentially said it was, if that was called a penalty on the field, there wouldn't have been a clear and obvious reason to overturn it.
Yep.
Because it wasn't called a penalty on the field, there wasn't a clear and obvious reason to overturn it.
Exactly.
Now, and let me say this, and then please go to town because we're talking about your side here. Honestly, right after that, for the rest of the first half, the wheels completely fell off for Spurs, and they got lost in being concerned about everything else except for what was going on the pitch, and Arsenal took advantage of that.
And I mean, 15 seconds after that happened, mm-hmm. because we marched right down the field, and Saka puts the ball in the back of the net. It was mm-hmm. fucking a lethal, brilliant counterattack. It was absolutely fantastic, obviously, and puts us up 2-0. And then you get another corner, and Kai Havertz steals in again at the near post, right? Yeah. And thumps home a brilliant header. And these clinical things, these reasons, like if he had put it wide, he'd go, oh, okay, great chance, you know, tight angle, whatever. That ends up being the game winner. You know what I mean? Like, these are the fine margins in which, you know, Christian Romero doesn't head against the post. This could be a totally different game.
Oh, my God, yes, absolutely. You know?
It's one of those things where these margins, and Arteta spoke about it in his post-match, where he said, you know, these are the margins that teams live and die by.
Also worth noting within this as well is normally teams at the top of the table, they're good on set pieces.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't the best in the fucking league. No. It's normally a team at the bottom end of the table, because who's number two? Everton. Who's number three? Luton.
Right.
Who's number one?
Us.
Arsenal fucking football club. I mean, it shows quite a bit of variety to be able to do that. But then also on the other side of the coin, since playing Everton and them really fucking with Vicario, it has been a blueprint, and you typically see him give up one at least every other game on a corner where he gets into trouble, and players know to fuck with him now.
It also
helps. Know to fuck with him.
Yeah, it helps when his gloves are being loosened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that. Was
fucking love it.
Shithousery at its best.
But obviously he didn't really try to rip the Velcro, but you could tell even Ben White was fucking with his sleeve, like just messing with him, and it put him off.
I've told...
And Ben White, the face he makes while he's doing it is just so nonchalant, just kind of reaching out and... Yeah, I'm going to just do this.
That's just a string. I'm going to pull on it a little. What's going on over here? I've talked about this before. It bears repeating. And I've told other keepers to do this, and they look at me like I'm crazy. Somebody wants to back right up against you and start fucking with you? Take your hand, put it right down on their ass, and give it a little squeeze. Tell them how cute they are. Because what they're trying to do is fuck with your head and fuck with your space and make you uncomfortable. Make them uncomfortable back.
Mm-hmm.
It means nothing.
Oh, yeah.
It is to make them... Remember, when we coached together, we had our one player who I told his job was to not touch the goalie at all, but his job is if the goalie walked left, he was to walk left with him, and then just start to talk to him. Be like, dude, I had a hot dog today, fresh diced onions, relish, really killer ketchup. It was Whataburger spicy ketchup. It was so good. And it was like, the point is to distract his ass.
Yeah.
And what did he do the first time he walked up?
I don't remember exactly.
It was the best.
A long time
ago now.
He walked
right up to the kid and just goes, I had a sandwich!
I do remember that now.
You can hear it from the sidelines. I was like, brilliant. Absolutely fucking brilliant. But with that being said, their Arsenal is 3-0 at the half.
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. And I heard a few people say today, kind of jokingly, kind of not, that there was, like, confused booing in the stands.
Uh-huh.
Because Tottenham actually played pretty fucking well.
Yeah.
It was three moments, right, that they were outclassed, right? And
he was after,
so it was like...
It was after the non-call on the penalty. They just, their brains, it was almost like they short-circuited for a second.
Exactly. It was like the boys on the ramble were going, boo?
Yeah.
It's like how they heard the fans in the stands.
Yeah, don't disagree.
It's like a huge question mark at the end of it.
Because you're looking at it going, we are playing
We're 3-0 down
to well
our biggest rivals at home, but we're playing great. Yeah.
How are we down 3-0?
And then you obviously had the offsides also. And I did want to say too, Mel, that if that was John McGinn defending, he'd have been on.
Mm-hmm.
But because it was Gabriel, we got away with it.
Yep.
He was off.
Yep.
It's not as voluptuous.
Now, I will say, coming into the second half, Ange did what he needed to do to motivate the team, and they were a completely different team in the second half. And
yes,
honestly, you guys were the team on your back foot just trying to fucking hang on.
We had about a 12-minute spell of being on top in the entire second half. Well, we should have scored again. Saka put it straight at Vicario.
Yeah,
That was a huge chance to really kill the game off.
Especially if you once they made it 3-1, if you could have made it 4-1, that ends it right
it's
there.
Done. It yeah, it just over. It would have deflated them.
And then they get the penalty.
But Christian Romero got his goal, obviously, and the penalty was terribly unlucky. Declan Rice, again, it was another accident. This one, there's no getting away from, though.
Because
he actually swung and pretty much made sure he wasn't going to have kids.
I found it very funny, and you and I talked about this offline. There was someone who had put out, you know, that Sergio Romero did the same thing earlier in the season, and there was a penalty called, and he got a red card. And I believe the remark that I said to you was, well, the difference was Declan Rice didn't know what was going on, and he fouled the guy. Sergio Romero... he knows when he's getting a red.
He planned it 3 minutes prior to it happening. Yeah.
He knows. Like, he is like, oh, watch this shit, everybody. I'm going to fucking hurt somebody.
Declan Rice's was involuntary manslaughter. Christian Romero's is murder one.
Premeditated murder. Murder one. That is just, that man has an intention on getting a red card.
Exactly. Wait for Thursday. Rematch of Chelsea Spurs. Mm-hmm. Romero's already going to be livid.
Right. Oh, yeah. Now, Mr. Graham, here's the thing. You hold on. You get the win. You're still on top of the league. Honestly, that's a big fucking test passed, man. I mean, you still need help, right? City's got a game in hand, and they need to drop some points.
City has to drop 2 points. So that they have to either draw or lose.
And that's you have to win out.
And we have to win out. Yeah. And I think we will.
Mm-hmm. I tend to agree. I don't. For me,
United ain't going to provide any.
I don't see
test
where United's going to provide a test. That's exactly what I was about to say. I feel like you guys should be able to handle them. But really, the big challenge was this. This was the fucking challenge.
This was the biggest test that we've had in this run-in, really. Mm-hmm. Besides, obviously, Villa. Those were the two that I was concerned about. And obviously, Villa proved to be a bigger problem than Spurs did.
Yeah.
Because we were less clinical, obviously. We controlled that game a bit more, but we let them in our head. We let the pressure get to us. This time, I thought we managed the occasion a bit better in this game, which shows a bit more growth again, right? You know, you looked at what happened against Bayern. Mm-hmm. We played the occasion and not the game in both of them, really.
Right.
And we're and then Villa, we played the occasion and not the game, and we let that get to our young team.
Yeah.
And I think we managed this and managed our emotions a bit better in this game. And we came out on top, obviously. I'm going to reach back here for something. I'm not sure what yet.
Okay. You just need a little whiskey to drink? Is that where Sam is grabbing into the...
we'll go to Bushmills 12.
Okay. Be prepared. The cap on that might be loose, so you might have to pull off the cap individually.
Heard.
Have a little shot for some St. Totteringham's Day, I presume, my good friend.
Yes, sir. If there we quickly need to explain to everybody what that is, would you like one or no?
I'll do one with you. Why not?
If we need to explain to everybody what that is,
let you have the honors of doing that.
Thank you very much. It is the day of the season that it is mathematically impossible for Tottenham to finish higher than Arsenal in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I will also just note, not to jinx anything, but just to put it out in the ether so good things come our way in complete honesty and openness. If Manchester City drop points, this will be the game that gave us the overtaking quality.
Right, precisely.
In 1971, I think it was, we won the league at White Hart Lane. Which was... the first time a team had won the league at White Hart Lane, as far as I'm aware.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2002, was it? Or 2004? No, it wasn't the unbeaten season. So it would have been 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Arsenal won the league at White Hart Lane for the first time since Arsenal won the league at White Hart Lane in 1971. So... it may have just happened again.
Oh, here's hoping. And I cheers with you also because... inadvertently, last week we ended Liverpool's title hope. So
well, exactly.
I'm right there with you.
So happy St. Totteringham's Day, St. Totteringham's Day, everyone! All the Gunners out there, just want to give you all a little recognition and celebrate with you.
Here's the fucking your rivals.
Come on,
very good. Now, no Foden, Erling Haaland on the bench. No fucking problem. I mean, it wasn't pretty because...
Well, there were problems. They all fell to Chris Wood's big dumb face.
Right. They're the... You're missing probably your two best players. I think it's now fair to say that I think Foden has taken over De Bruyne as far as one of their best players, in my opinion.
How much they rely on him, yes. I think De Bruyne is probably better than Foden.
Offers you a more complete game.
Yeah, it's more vision, has the passing exactly, can still strike a ball, has free kicks. But Phil Foden does track back a bit. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of it's more of a torch being passed rather than a rivalry of who's better than.
Very fair.
Because De Bruyne, just at his age and with his injuries, I think he's not going to be as consistent or put the same numbers up as Phil Foden's going to be able to.
Silva to De Bruyne.
Yeah, exactly.
Same scenario. Now, you have that. You're missing two key players. One's on the bench. One's not playing at all. You're going to a ground that they're not as strong at as they used to be, but still a tough place to play with a team with their back against the wall. And quite frankly, Forest couldn't have done much better other than finishing.
God bless it.
They played well. They played a very good game.
If everything else happens exactly the way it did, except for Chris Wood finishes his chances, Forest win 4-2.
I would also say another thing I would throw at it. I don't think the men on the field is what hurt Forest this day. I think it was Nuno. Because you had Nico Williams hurt. You don't immediately sub him in. Corner kick goal right then and there. And then you have Murillo, who's clearly hurt. You leave him on the pitch, and that's who's covering Haaland when Haaland scores a second goal. I mean, those are bad decisions, and frankly... That goes on the coach. It goes on the coach. Because Murillo, even at that point, too, had been hurt, got up, laid down at one point, and they kind of made him get back up and keep playing. And then finally, after the goal was scored, he just sat on the ground and didn't get up.
Until he was
fucking subbed off. Like,
it made some questions. And the commentary was talking about it as well the entire time. You know, what is he doing? Obviously, he's hurt. He's limping.
Yeah, like he is hurt.
It's all decision making from the coach. In that, you're absolutely right. But before those things, like I said, I mean, I thought Forrest played this game pretty fucking well. I think Alanga had a couple of chances, or Hudson-Odoi rather had a couple of chances. I think Alanga had one here or there, and then obviously they fell to Chris Wood, and then you know, Ederson goes down injured in the first half. Mm-hmm. Doesn't come out for the second half. He made it through halftime. But Ortega comes out from the start of the second half. Shoot from anywhere.
Test his ass. Yeah.
He's been subbed on twice ever.
Yeah.
He starts games.
Yeah. See,
if Ederson's not fit, he starts.
Yeah.
He doesn't get subbed in. That's one of the hardest positions to get subbed in.
Oh, yeah. You have to come on cold. There is no
You go center midfield. Now, it was at halftime, so I think they probably were at least had some catching practice in the hallway of the changing room.
Your first real warm-up, though, is the first save you make.
That's the
first real warm-up you're having in a match like that as a keeper.
I mean, if Pep's smart, and I imagine he is, we obviously don't see what happens at halftime.
Right.
But you know how there's a faction of players that sometimes stay on the field? It wouldn't surprise me if Pep had this in his mind, if Ederson was carrying this injury, that, hey, Ortega, you're going in. Stay out there and take some shots from somebody from the academy or Oscar Bob or whoever. Shoot at him a couple times.
Shoot some hard ones.
It wouldn't surprise me if he took a couple at halftime. But but you're absolutely right. And you have to test him. You have to test his command of the penalty area, especially with Chris Wood's big dumb face standing in there. So put crosses in early and do things to make him uncomfortable.
And they basically
Ruben Diaz as well. Because he was
five,
sick.
They did a 5-4-1 and they dropped Gibbs White deeper. And Gibbs White's job was, okay, defense is going to knock it out to about 35 yards. Gibbs White, the ball needs to be on Alanga or Loftus-Cheek's foot. On the outside, and they're going to be running up the field. And
right.
Chris Wood, be ready. The problem was, Chris, we weren't ready.
No.
That was the problem.
And the worst part about it is he's been pretty reliable for them over the last few months.
Scoring a ton of goals, and especially as of recent, he's been scoring a ton of goals.
Right, keeping Divock Origi out of the team,
yeah.
Right? And Obonyi's obviously hurt, and he wouldn't be playing if it wasn't for him, besides 15, 20-minute cameos. But he's been fairly reliable, and the points that Forrest have accumulated over the last couple of months,
right.
He's been the main catalyst for getting them from a finishing standpoint, where Gibbs White's the creative standpoint, if that makes sense.
And finally, for City, they hold serve while actually getting to rest players. So this is a win-win for them. It doesn't get easier. They still have, I mean, they should beat Wolves. Wolves are missing people, but Wolves did get Wang and Cunha back. And
oh, yeah.
Wolves, traditionally, love to give City fits.
Yeah.
They give City fits all the fucking time.
I just hope they're healthy enough to do something. I think the same thing about Fulham, because Fulham away is coming up as well. I mean, City don't have the easiest of schedules.
Mm-hmm.
There's been easier schedules that have existed to close the season out. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? They've already used their Sheffield United voucher is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Allow me to say the following, though. We do know this. Aubameyang is so much more prolific than a big dumb face. We turn our attention to the relegation battle, which now has a three-team race, as someone has just secured safety. Wolverhampton 2, Luton 1, Burnley 2, Manchester United 2, Everton 1, Brentford 0. Obviously, Forrest is in this discussion, but we talked about him in the first segment. It is amazing what happens when Wang and Cunha are healthy.
Yeah, no like, shit. But this was another game kind of almost similar to Arsenal Spurs, where it, obviously not as emotional, but both teams had chances. They were kind of trading punches back and forth early on, right?
Yeah.
Jose Sa largely was relatively comfortable.
Right.
Kaminski made a couple of more decent saves, but still nothing like spectacular. Either way,
in fairness, Kaminski has kept Luton in a lot of games,
right? But I mean, just like the patriarchy, Mel, it was the Wang that finished first, and that's how it's supposed to go. She's Wang, really focused on her work right now, and Wang I like fucking with her a little bit, just enough. Don't grab the knife. Oh, good.
And also, I mean, then you also have Cunha scoring, and that kind of just, you know, 2-0 done and dusted until...
No, it was Tati.
Tati
scored with the diving yeah. headers.
That's
fucking
right.
Fantastic.
My apologies.
And a great early cross as well. Again, going back to like Forrest, this is shit that makes keepers uncomfortable. Put that ball in early. The defense wasn't set. They were up around the penalty spot, and he put this ball right on the corner of the six. You know, it was perfect.
Keeper Tati had to come out.
No, he doesn't know what to do. It's in the, as they call, the corridor of uncertainty.
I love it.
where the keeper goes, fuck, 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 and doesn't know what to do. And Tati had to stretch for it a bit, but he timed it well, and it was perfect. What a header. It was great.
But the one thing you got to say for Luton is they never give up.
They
found
don't.
A way to get a goal.
They don't. But I figured it out here, right? And I actually wrote some stats down to prove my point a bit. The second half started really brightly for Wolves with obviously the Tati goal. But once they went two goals up, from Luton's perspective, where's that going to come from? Where are you going to find three?
Right.
Right? Right. They've been at Kenilworth Road against Arsenal, scored three, against Liverpool, tied 3-3, right? Arsenal game, they obviously still lost. My problem with them, if they've only scored 48 goals in the 34 games they've played so far, 35 games they've played so far, it's 77 goals against, right?
Right.
We've praised them multiple times for sticking to their principles and trying to play properly, right? And trying to get out and be expansive and run and do stuff. With that sort of goal record, and you could figure this out around Christmas if you really wanted to drill down to it and maybe just be a touch more pragmatic.
It's Blackpool when they were in the Prem.
Right.
At the start of the season, they had a 4-4 draw against United. By the end of the season, they lost to United 5-0.
Exactly. just what I'm saying is be a bit more pragmatic, right? So, like, you know, Arsenal, City, you know, whoever at the top, even Liverpool to an extent, right? They can take more chances because defensively they're sound.
And
they know when to run. They know when to rotate. Everybody's got a job, and they have a very, very clear high level of expectation of concentration.
Right.
And once again, Luton, for all of the fire and fight and vigor and exciting nature of their football, they get let down by two mistakes.
Yeah.
Really. Ultimately, they get let down by two mistakes. And it's just like, just be, because I want you here. I want you to still be in the Premiership. So just be a touch pragmatic going down these last four or five games.
It feels like because they can't be.
Right. And Forrest are not in any rich vein of form or anything.
Honestly, Luton, three left. That's it. They got three left to get it right.
So, you know, two wins and a draw, I think you stay up.
Probably.
Even 4 points, you might stay up.
Yeah. But you got to hurry up and get them.
But you also have to be a little pragmatic. You can't leave yourself so open.
And we'll get on to the comparison in a couple of games when we talk about Everton, because that is the pragmatic that we're talking about. But I want to, the one other thing that is important to note about Luton is everyone sustains injuries, but they're real thin right now at a time they can't afford to be real thin.
Yeah, their injuries did happen at a very key time. Yeah.
Hurts them a lot.
You're absolutely right.
Clarets are not going out without a fight, man. And they honestly, the first half, they were the better side.
Well,
they were better than United. They just were.
So this, I thought, was a very strange. I thought there were a lot of strange games this weekend. You know, in different stages, they all kind of offered the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very weird. There was no, like, you know, we talked about in Arsenal, there was no really clear front runner for the first 28 minutes. Right. In Wolves Luton, they said for the first 18 minutes, there was no clear front runner. It was a bit of a ding dong. Yeah. Then it finished as a bit of a ding dong. Right. In this one, United was dominant as shit for the first. I think Burnley had one chance and United had seven that I saw. Right. In that first half. But Muric largely is a good keeper, makes a couple of bonehead-ass errors throughout the season here that you look at and just go, God bless it, what are you doing? you know, you think to the back pass. Burnley kind of turned on the style after that, right? And for the second half of the first half, dominated.
Yeah, and they looked good.
It looked very good. And United couldn't hang. They couldn't figure it out. But to that point, had it not been for Onana and Muric, halftime could have been 4-4.
Oh, God,
if United had scored three of their opening eight chances or whatever it was in that 15-minute stretch, the game could have been done and dusted. But Burnley, you know, we've seen over the last few weeks, just don't quit. Think of the Chelsea game, right, where they came back, scored injury time. I think it was injury time. If not, it was very late. You know, and then Burnley go on that stretch and have six or seven chances, eight chances or so.
Mm-hmm.
And Onana's making, I mean, the Lyle Foster kind of flicked header. What a save.
Mm-hmm.
What a save. You know, and then again, Lyle Foster bearing down 1-on-1, takes it straight off the chest. You know, it's like, well done, bro. And then he showed why we all made fun of him.
Second
half.
It is very fitting that he gets called for a penalty on the penalty he should have been called on in the very first game of the season.
Yeah.
The minute it happened, because I knew that Danny, our Baltimore Wolves friend, was watching, obviously, the Wolves play, and I just sent him a message that went, Onana just did the exact same fucking thing he did against you guys in the first game, but this time he got called a pen. He, during the middle of his game, went and looked it up and was like, God, Jesus Christ, motherfucker. Like,
so he was put, fair enough, he was put in a very bad spot by Casemiro.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the worst defensive headers I've ever seen.
Yes.
A cushioned header back to your goalkeeper still needs to have a bit of pace to it.
So he can get it.
And it needs to be about flat to his chest.
Yeah.
That was skyrocketed and not even close to him.
It was like a big old pop fly.
And Onana had to come for it.
Yeah. Oh, he had no choice.
What he didn't have to do was pretend he was Dwayne The Rock Johnson and drop the people's elbow on the Burnley attacker. But that's what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went from hero to zero after those first few kind of brilliant saves, giving away the penalty that they equalized on. But you have to say, also, credit where credit's due, Anthony, who's had the roughest of seasons, who we've made fun of constantly this show, Anthony, anticipating that kind of poor pass across the back line, stealing in, and at 100 miles an hour after getting bumped, maintained his feet and found the composure to just slot into that far corner as he's running across goal. It was actually quite a brilliant goal from him, to be completely fair.
I completely agree.
And, you know, now we'll get 6 more weeks of bullshit.
Now, and here's the one thing you have to continue to say about United. They're fucking frauds, man. They're fucking frauds.
Well, there's the thing.
There's a good chance they could not be playing in Europe if West Ham figures out a way to get a few results and Newcastle does what they keep doing. Uh-huh. There is a very good chance that United will be looking at a season without any European
The only chance they would have is beating City in the FA Cup final.
Which, that ain't fucking happening.
Good luck. Yeah.
It ain't fucking happening.
So, but the other piece to this too, right, is look at the response. Right, look what happens to Arsenal, to Manchester City, to teams of this caliber, right? And then we've been talking about Chelsea in this manner all season. Look what happens to teams of this quote-unquote ilk, this big six mentality, money, and talent level, right? Burnley had more possession at Old Trafford than Manchester United did. They were
embarrassing.
They were only outshot on target, specifically. United had a shit ton of shots that went nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
They were only outshot by 2 on target, right?
Yeah.
They obviously drew the game, but specifically after Burnley equalized, United still had no plan at the back, but pushed forward and bombed on to try to win the game, which left them very, very open. Like, think back to the Arsenal-Bayern game, right? Which is how we gave up that second goal. We just bombed on to try to do something and got caught out 30 seconds later after we started to bomb on. That was an experience against a bigger, more seasoned club with players that have won shit before.
Yeah,
which most of our players haven't, to be completely fair. United looked like that against a team in the relegation zone.
Yeah.
My team looked like that against Bayern fucking Munich. It's a bit different.
Very different.
It's
now,
a bit different.
Final thought here, and then I want to move on to the last game and get on to Oso. For me, if you're looking at the three teams that are in it now, which is Luton, it's Burnley, and it's Nottingham Forest, other than the dud against Everton at Everton, Burnley is hands down the informed team.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're doing something that the other teams aren't doing. They're at least getting draws. Now, they need to win, right?
And what did I tell you last season, right, with Dice? You were like, man, we're not getting any wins. I was like, bro, you're getting draws. Points on the board matter.
Dude, during the 4 months of us not winning any games at all, you know what we did a shit ton of? Drew. Because of those, like, let's say you took that and said it was 10 matches. I think it was like 12 or something like that. I think it was 6 or 7 losses and 5 or 6 draws. Like,
yeah, it's as good as 2 wins. Yeah.
You got points.
When teams in that area aren't winning games.
Right.
So
precisely.
You put, quote unquote, 2 wins on the board, just did it over, you know, you did a payment plan with points over 6 games.
So for me, gun to my head, I'm saying Burnley's going to be the safe team. I just, they seem to be doing the right fucking thing at the right fucking time.
Now, can I bring to your attention a tweet from the Premier League? Did you see this?
No, I have not.
After the result on whenever Sheffield United played, what was it, Saturday?
Yep.
The Premier League tweeted, Sheffield United have been the first team relegated from the Premier League in the 23-24 season. Pending the appeals of Everton and Nottingham Forest and their further point deductions. or potential further point deductions.
Right.
a tweet that was later deleted. Because that appeal could prove to be frivolous and it could increase your point deductions.
Right.
Supposedly.
Yeah, supposedly. as of right now, let's say this. I want to start by saying this was a dog shit match. An absolute dog shit match. And I'll let you chime in a moment. But the two things I'm going to say, Toffees by points are now officially safe unless the Premier League decides to try to fucking Alex Jones conspiracy theory fuck us again, which I wouldn't put past
them. They're going to turn the fucking Toffees gay.
Precisely. And but the other thing to say, the Bees had their stud top three. They had
everyone.
Tony,
yeah.
Wiesa, and Mbeumo. And
Jordan Pickford was immense again.
And here's what we were talking about.
Yep.
The Toffees are second in the league in shutouts, only behind Arsenal. And they are the fourth best goals against in the league. They have scored less goals than Luton. But they know how to win a 1-0 game.
Yeah.
And it's why they're safe and why Luton are in trouble.
Yeah.
It is legitimately that fucking simple.
100%. So I'll sum it up for you if that's what you want, because I wrote two sentences about this game.
Yep.
Really.
It's all it really deserves.
Two lines. Dice would be pinching a tent in his newly bought tracksuit for this, wouldn't he?
Mm-hmm.
One shot on target, one goal, under half possession at home. Clinch Prem survival, though. Cue the party the rest of the season, because he was down the pub anyway.
You know what? Drissa Gueye might be kind of good at what he does. Just going to keep saying that. He's got an option.
At 34 years old with a lot of miles on the clock. He is proven to be the adult in the room.
He's got an option. Everton, exercise it for one more year.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he's not playing all the time, that's a guy you need.
You need him to. Do you see how much? And I'm still waiting it for it to take hold, but do you see how much him and Danjuma fucking talk on the sidelines all the time?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he does Danjuma's snake thing whenever he scores a goal.
Yeah. But they're just constant, and it happened again this weekend, mm-hmm. where they're just like, you know, they're just in each other's ears, like constantly, and then laughing. And
yep.
It's like, fucking put Danjuma in, see if maybe he can score a worm burner.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe it's not a snake. Maybe it's a worm.
That could be exactly what it is.
It rains a lot there. They have a lot of worms.
Now, finally, and Dice likes to eat them. The last thing I would like to say about this.
Why are you shaking your head?
I just mentioned the two. It's probably the
first part
sewing.
She's listened to in the last 12 minutes.
It's the sewing circle, and she's over there chatting with them. Don't be concerned about what she's doing. We're doing a show over.
I'm worried about. She's wearing an apron. I have to be worried about what she's doing.
I want to finish with this thought, Mr. Graham.
As she drinks her gin
is
and
now,
takes her pills.
There could be two teams if Forest ends up ultimately surviving, but Everton is the first club to receive a points deduction in the top flight and survive relegation.
Uh-huh.
And
maintain their second longest, the second longest streak of top flight stability.
Right. And also, they have played the most top flight games of any club in the history of the Premier League,
yep.
in the history of all of English football from yep. the beginning. But it's because obviously we were around before.
Longer than a lot of people. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the final thing in all of that is that was with that punishment, it was the second highest point deduction ever. And Everton figured it out. Maybe, just maybe, people should give Dyche just a little bit of fucking credit.
Without that points deduction?
Yeah.
You're in 12th.
Yeah, we're in 12th.
Yeah.
Easy.
He did a fucking good job.
Rounding out the rest of the league, and oh, so that happened. West Ham 2, Liverpool 2, Fulham 1, Palace 1, Newcastle 5, Sheffield 1, Villa 2, Chelsea 2, Bournemouth 3, Seagulls 0. Let's go ahead and get through this quickly, Mr. Graham.
The first one we can't get through quickly.
Well, the play on.
Well, it's not even about the game.
The
play on. It's about the two controversies.
Yeah.
What it is. It's about the two controversies because...
Now the Kopites have something they can hang the entire season on. Not the fact that they got worked at fucking Goodison Park by Everton. That they got flat out beat.
Mm-hmm.
No, it will be the fucked up call on the field where it looked like the ref said play on.
He did. He did say play on.
Yeah. It was just...
So Areola lands at the base of the post, foot propped against the post. Could have turned his ankle or something, whatever. Right. He obviously thought the game was dead because he threw the ball out in front of him and was still kind of holding his ankle and fixing his socks. Gakpo was like, I thought I saw the referees they play on. What Gakpo should have done, which he didn't do, was put the ball in the back of the net and let the VAR figure it out.
Exactly what I was going to say, was put it in the back of the net and make VAR fucking figure it out.
Yep. He did not do that and allowed the referee to just blow his whistle, and that's it.
Because then you can then have VAR say to the ref, to Taylor, what did you do? Did you call play on?
Yep.
Or did you call that a foul?
So
then they can at least say definitively that even if he put it out his arms, if Taylor goes, I called the ball dead, then fine. It's over.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
So think back. Cast your mind back to a long time ago when Arsenal played Manchester United at Old Trafford and Aubameyang scored that goal that everyone thought was offside. De Gea stopped playing.
Mm-hmm.
The whistle was never blown.
Right.
Aubameyang scored. They went to the VAR offside line check.
Mm-hmm.
Aubameyang was onside. The goal stood, even though the players on the field quit on the play.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whistle was never blown.
Whistle wasn't blown.
So this is all Gakpo had to do, and he did not do it.
He just put the ball in the back of the net.
Well, just kick it.
I mean, very simply put, Liverpool is fucking imploding right now. They're fucking imploding.
Well, you know, the other thing is the announcer said during the game, this is the first thing I wrote down about it, the first thing I noticed was what he said was that Jaron Bowen and West Ham stole the lead. They were the better team, as you said.
Yeah.
They were better than Liverpool.
They played their game. There's not going to be style points with a David Moyes West Ham team.
No, absolutely.
They're going to sit back and wait for you to make a mistake. 100%. You make a mistake, they're going to score.
Yeah, boom. So there's two more things. Obviously, Jared Bowen scores. You have Mikel Antonio off the back of a great cross, adjusted his body well midair.
What a got beautiful
what a
header.
Fucking header that was,
God,
right?
That was a great header.
So that's all well and good. Andy Robertson squeezed a goal in, and Elliot struck the bar later on. And then a very comical own goal, actually, with Gravenberch just before Elliott struck the bar, where Gravenberch was a shit shot, actually. It was more of a shank out. Would have gone out for a throw-in.
Right.
Had it not hit four West Ham players to go into the back of the net.
And then bounced into the back of the net.
Absolutely pitiful. Fuck all that shit. Don't care. Klopp and Salah, what happened?
That is,
I'm here for the tea. Mel, you're a woman. Y'all do the tea thing. Tell me what happened. You didn't know I was going to do that.
No,
it's fine. She has no idea what it's all about.
She's doing. She's
I'm
on
just
work
fucking
now.
With her. I know. I told you I was going to do that.
For me, after the game, Klopp immediately said the matter's been resolved. But then
Mo Salah didn't say that.
Salah was like, "I'm
if
not
I
doing
speak,
interview.
There will be fire."
Right.
Is what he said.
The most Egyptian thing to ever
if I
say.
Speak, there will be fire. Ra will rain thunder down upon you. Fucking hell.
Like, what are we going into the temple? No,
you're bringing the fucking old gods into it.
Yeah. Are we doing Raiders of the Lost Ark? There's going to be snakes all over the floor and shit. Like,
stop. That could be seen as problematic.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just the fucking, the, it was so
giant
great.
Boulder chasing him down Anfield.
Like,
as
just, like, I just love the "there will be fire." Just like
I do like the idea of Klopp using a whip to swing from a rafter to get away from something. I think that'd be quite funny.
Just
I think his teeth actually increase the drag, though. The thing might catch him.
Well, I would say Salah probably is a little frustrated because he's not starting regularly now. He's also not performing
not
well,
doing anything.
But also. Like, you keep your thoroughbred on the fucking track, right? Like, if they, you know, and I think that perhaps Klopp's tinkering too much, and then he goes to put him on the pitch, and I guarantee you it was probably something very nonchalant from Klopp, like, go out there and get us a goal.
Fucking
like,
do something,
right,
yeah.
Right, go out there and get it done. Get us
I've
a
done
goal.
Too much for this and club, then, you fucking
and,
piece
and,
of
no,
shit.
Salah probably turned around yeah. and went, probably could have done more if I played the whole fucking game, asshole. You know, is what you pretty much figure has happened is like,
well, but it's like
well maybe it should have started me.
Yeah, I mean, he's got, what, two Premier League golden boots under his belt. He's won them a title, which even though there's an asterisk because of COVID, for the first time in 30 fucking years, and it was mainly on his back. There could be an argument like, if Arsene Wenger dropped Thierry Henry, or if any one of Spurs' 19 managers dropped Harry Kane, if they were out of form, there'd be calls for their head.
Yeah.
You let them play themselves back into form.
You let and Salah play himself.
Klopp's
back into
leaving
form.
Is like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I'm going out with a mic drop. I'm in charge, bitch.
It makes you start to wonder how it's all going to finish out, because, I mean, they still got to play Villa, and Villa going to give them a hard fucking time.
Oh, yeah, and it doesn't matter how it plays out because of what David Moyes said. Mm. Did you see David Moyes' post-match?
No, I did not.
Oh! They said, what do you think about, you know, your last time playing against Jurgen Klopp, managing against Jurgen Klopp? And he said, to be honest with you, I'll be obviously the fucking back of him. he's too big. His teeth are too bright. This is a fucking quote he said in a goddamn interview. Now, he said it cheekily with a bit of a smile on his face, as much as David Moyes can smile.
Right.
He said he's too big. His teeth are too white. And I'll be happy to see the back of him.
No, I fucking love it.
He said, obviously, he's been great for Liverpool, and he's been able to manage a very big club for a long time to varying degrees of success. You know, he's lifted a lot of trophies, he said. But you're asking me this question, and I've managed the two teams that are as big as rivals.
Yeah, I don't care.
Right.
Don't
and everybody went for a second. Everton and...
Oh, you
were Manchester United for a little bit.
Yep, precisely.
He just... It was very... You know,
yeah. Why should he care about Jurgen Klopp at all?
Well, exactly. But you know, he did give him his credit, and he, like I said, he said it with a smile on his face. He was a bit jokey. The teeth thing, completely unnecessary. I thought, but absolutely fucking hysterical.
It is fabulous.
And according to now me myself, he's ferrying him right across into the Sea of Hades.
Beautiful.
Across the River Styx.
Final thought. Let's keep it going. Is Irons are still in the hunt for Europe.
Yes, I mean, they are.
Things fall their way. They're not out of it. That's for
correct.
Damn sure.
Absolutely.
Keeping it rolling. For Fulham, there's not a lot to really discuss about this game.
Fucking boring.
Muniz gets a goal, which is nice, and Schlupp's goal was a fucking banger. I mean, that's really all you could say about this goal. Schlupp's goal, a fucking banger.
This is why Jay's not coming on the show, because Schlupp's goal in my book was good enough for two. Fulham lost this game.
Very good.
That's how fucking perfect that strike was. What a hit.
Keeping it rolling again. The Blades are now the first team officially relegated, and sitting on 97 goals against, the worst in a 38 or 42 game season ever in the history of the top flight.
And they still got 3 games to go.
And they still got 3 games to go. They're going to break 100.
Now they really
They're going to break
care.
100.
Yeah. They gave a better effort of it to begin with. It well, actually went into halftime at 1-1.
Yeah. They scored
like
first.
But like usual, they can't keep their organization and concentration over 90 minutes.
No.
And once the wheels fall off, they fucking really fall off.
Yep, and it was over.
And by the end,
you could just tell, the minute they went down 2-1, they were defeated. They knew.
Callum Wilson hasn't played since, what, Thanksgiving?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, been a minute.
Really? And came in and does that?
That's, yep.
It's just bad, man. And they're going to get picked off. Barrington Diaz, he's gone. My book. He's getting bought by somebody.
Oh, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
I think they might find it difficult in the championship as well.
So Newcastle get some points back because they got the win, and obviously United with
the
tie.
But the goal differential as well,
goal
which is huge.
So huge.
Yeah. Especially
this
United
is
dropping
literally 3 points.
Points left, right, and center.
Yeah, precisely. So I feel like I think Newcastle's going to jump United, and for me it becomes, can West Ham catch United is the question. And I'm really starting to think.
Well, David Moyes is having much more of a party than Jurgen Klopp is. And because David Moyes has been announced he's leaving at the end of the year.
Wouldn't Moyes love
his
to
players
fucking...
are responding to him.
Yeah.
Klopp's players are yelling at him on the sidelines.
Yeah, precisely. And wouldn't Moyes love to see Manchester United not make it into any European competition?
Yeah, he would, especially when Erik ten Hag's going to get fired this summer and he needs a job.
Because since Sir Alex left, they haven't been good.
Nope. They've won some cups.
But they've always been in Europe.
Yeah.
They have always been in Europe. Imagine a world.
Even us fell out of it, yeah.
With Manchester fucking United not playing in Europe, it's a real fucking proposition. It is a real fucking proposition this
season. I like
it.
I'm here for it.
So Villa start the game great, but finished horrifically. And honestly, very simply, something for Chelsea to build on. Like, they at least came back. That's against a very good team.
Mel, I'm sorry to bother you. I do want your opinion on this. Did you watch your game, right, against Chelsea?
I did.
I thought that this is why I don't think this is necessarily something for Chelsea to build on, mm-hmm. if they actually watch it back. The result, yes, great. But Villa, for me, looked very lethargic.
Yeah, we were tired.
They just did not give a fuck.
They got a European semifinal to worry about this week.
We were sleepy.
I mean, yeah. there's a reason why Olsen went in the second half. You need to get him minutes because he's starting on Thursday.
Well, he has to. No, yeah, Emmy's hurt. Right.
No, Emmy is actually hurt. Okay, I did
From
not know
what
Emmy
I understand,
was.
There is a hamstring injury.
Uh-oh, how bad that could be the season.
We don't know.
But I would also say the one good thing that comes out of this for Villa is at least they got a point, and they got a 7-point lead on Spurs. Now, Spurs still have that game in hand.
Yeah, you're welcome, by the way.
But even if they beat... Even
we
if
beat
they
Spurs
beat,
for
even
you.
If Spurs beat Chelsea, still a 4-game lead with three games left. They should be able to hold on a 4-point lead with three games left.
Right, that's why I'm saying thank you, and I don't know why you're rolling your eyes at me, because we kept it in your hands. If you went out and Spurs went out, you win.
You think you're going for a title still. You guys did it for yourself.
Think. Sam, she said. Think.
She's feeling fucking chesty, isn't she?
I know she is. She hasn't listened to a word we've said all night.
Nope.
And then finally, the final thing I want to talk about is obviously Cherries finishing off Brighton. This will be a topic for another time. We've gone too long already to really get into it, and I want to give it its proper respect. So we'll talk about it maybe next week. But for me, this is a team heading in one direction and a team heading in the other direction. We can't keep saying Brighton's tired. That's obvious. Like, it's like for 4 weeks where all we said was Fulham plays good defense. Like, they're really faltering, and I think they're going to be at a crossroads in the offseason, whereas Bournemouth are growing as a team, and I don't see them as a team that's going to have a lot of players picked off, and it feels like a team that's growing together.
The only person that probably could lose is Solanke at this point.
Right.
Clivert, I think, is still relatively improved. Semenyo, same thing, blah, 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 right? Maybe Neto goes as a backup to a bigger club, but he ain't going to start anywhere else. But Brighton, the only thing I'd worry about is that they also have picked up injuries at a key time. And also, besides being the backups being exhausted because they didn't think they were going to have to play, is they just look like a shell of themselves. Like, those people that are playing that are like third in the pecking order are very obviously not paying as much attention in training.
No.
Because there are so many defensive mistakes that weren't happening about 3 months ago when everyone was fit.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, they are definitely
not great.
They are not. I'm a seagull. Go fuck yourself right now.
And I just wonder if De Zerbi is like, I'm getting a Liverpool job. Fuck this. Don't care.
Sure money.
I might have to change the name of this segment. I lost again.
Oh, yeah, no shit.
I am down $2,147.
All right. What are you feeding the cup of losers, my friend?
I just don't know anymore.
Oh, that sounds like somebody who's given up.
It's very defeatist. It's very blady.
My friend, we have the Cup of Losers for a reason. It's Triple Crown season, my friend.
I know, and I've been paying tribute all season again.
Time to start betting them ponies and winning, baby. That's all there is to it.
I know. I actually had to check the score of the Lakers game because maybe my real money's doing better than my fake money.
Heard real money.
All right. So what do you got going on? Give my piece of shit bet at the end, which will also buy me some time to look up Pat stuff.
Very good. I lost because Villa dry humped, and I am down $478.
Big Sam's lock of the week.
That may be the best thing you've ever said on the show.
Oh, wait. I've got more. Did you know that 25% of the time, nice even number, it works 100% of the time, kids. That's twice in a season we've hit a nice round number.
Round number.
Yeah.
Because 25 famously is odd. Yeah.
I said round number.
You said even first. Okay, very good.
All right, no problem. For mine, I did Villa Durfs. Ah, he knows it! Graham knows it! Graham, would you like to tell
I don't want to say that to anybody. I do have some standards.
Okay, it has a little something to do with dry humping, everybody.
Don't explain it.
Feel free to Google search yourself.
Dictionary is your friend at this point.
You know what? Do your own research. Do your own research. Fuck it. I'm going to go risky. I'm going to do a 3-game parlay. I'm going
to
take
risky. Mm-hmm. Fuck off. You talk to me about risky.
Forest to beat Sheffield, Brentford to beat Fulham, and Villa to beat Brighton at plus 684.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. And those are all three games other than Villa. You expect Villa to play hard because they have something to play for. But the other two, like, it's a derby, Brentford and Fulham. Who fucking knows, right? You know, Forest and Sheffield. Now that Sheffield doesn't fucking care and Forest is, Jesus Christ, we have to fucking win. Like,
what do you do? Yeah.
These are the games. She's got, that's why the odds are so fucking good, because nobody knows.
Yeah. Even the book doesn't know for once until they pay people
and
off.
Now it's time for our degenerate gambling friend, Pat's Pick of the Week.
All right. So he said, looking like a fool with your draws on the ground.
Yeah. Looking like a man. Do some old Miss Bunny.
I lost a Mad TV
reference, everybody.
What he says is, quote, I lost with 3 out of the 4 games I bet on ending in draws. So now down to minus 1,400. Going to make this quick and simple. $100 on a draw in the Tottenham-Liverpool match this weekend, plus 410. Good luck to you guys and the chicken on your bets this weekend, and I'll talk later. Sounds like he's a bit better.
Yeah,
actually,
I think he is a little bit better.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, good.
He is a big American sports fan and does not fancy the old draws.
No, he does not.
He's not a fan of the draws. All right. Gonna need some help if I'm gonna claw this back this season.
Not good gambling.
It has not been good gambling. Like I said, I'm down $21.47 overall. Yes. That is $2,147. That is
9-way parlay.
It's only 6.
But it's gonna get you out of it.
Maybe, because last season, if you recall, I was down $3,800 because I lost every single fucking bet I made.
Single bet, right.
And I did hit a couple times this season. Uh-huh. So I think I might have something here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be because of a lot of this relegation fodder. You ready?
Get it the fuck together, Sam.
Here we go. Luton or draw with Everton simply because they need it and you don't.
Yeah, we don't.
And it's at Kenilworth Road.
Mm-hmm.
So, bang. Arsenal to win against Bournemouth. We're at home and we need it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably going to happen. Newcastle or draw away to Burnley. Their 5 goals got me excited. I think they may be quote-unquote back. They're also fighting for Europe and trying to catch United. Burnley still aren't that good, even though they're in better form than they were.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Newcastle takes them out. Forest to win away at Sheffield United. Sheffield United doesn't give a shit. Nottingham Forest cares a lot.
Why I picked it.
Bang. Villa to beat Brighton. Stated in the last game that we covered. Brighton are just fucking up.
Yeah.
Villa are good and need it. They'll also know where they stand after that European semifinal first leg.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're sitting pretty at 2-0, 3-0, or 2-1, 3-1, they're going to feel pretty good about, okay, let's focus on this now. Like, we have a chance here to focus on this, and then we can be a bit pragmatic in the second leg. No problem. So I think that's going to happen. And then West Ham draw or win a double chance at Chelsea.
Right. There we go.
Because Chelsea are so unpredictable and don't know what they're doing. Well, West Ham looked pretty good. That
not good gambling.
All pays me a plus $1,915. So that's a double chance Luton or draw, in case you're keeping track. That's Newcastle or draw with Burnley. And that's a West Ham or draw with Chelsea. Those are all double chances. Okay. Then you've got Arsenal to beat Bournemouth, Forest to beat Sheffield United, and Villa to beat Brighton in the straight wins.
I was going to say in the ass.
I sincerely wonder if Graham's like betting board in his house has like got red strings all going.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, definitely. Let's. You know what? While Mel's getting ready to cold read her things, let's see what old Jokic is doing in the Denver game.
Well,
I have a thing.
Well. We do have a chicken.
Well, Kitty hit with City, and she sits at 19 and 15. So this week, I gave Kitty Brentford hosting Fulham in a West London derby. Kitty showed me a picture of her hanging out with Brian McBride, Tim Ream, and Jedi Robinson at a fan meet and greet in D.C. over the summer.
Oh, that's right. They were in town for the Premier League summer tour.
Yeah, well, besides being U.S. men's national team players, they also all played for Fulham. And so looks like Kitty is picking the Cottagers over the Bees.
Going exactly against what we said there, huh? How about that?
What were you expecting me to flub on that one?
Interesting. Nothing. I expected you to get it. I expected you to do a good job, hon, and you did.
Well, wonderful.
I expected you to do good job.
Do you know what other people that do good jobs do?
What?
Gamble legally and responsibly.
Okay, very good.
Oh, you missed it.
It stayed in front of me. It was a dropper. I could fall on that and save it easily. We'll be all right. All right, that's going to wrap it up, boys and girls. Mr. Graham, any parting words?
No, but you got sent something that you probably want to talk about, I think. You know a little bit more intimately than I do.
Actually, I wanted to talk about a different one. There was the story that Brody sent us, but the one I wanted to talk about was... Burnley and their supporters have not been gun shy of being involved in some tomfoolery before. As we remember, there was a season when Saha was still with Palace that some Burnley supporters did some pretty racist shit.
Uh-huh.
Well, at the match this week at Old Trafford, father with his two young sons there, because his two young sons were watching him do it, looked right over at all the United supporters, put his arms right out in the air and started going woo like an airplane right fucking in front of them.
The Busbies. Busbies babes.
And just
and the Munich air disaster of 1956. Also
where half their fucking team died.
If not more.
Yeah.
I do also, there's certain things, certain tragedies you don't touch on. It's this Hillsborough for Liverpool.
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff you just kind of leave alone. For Cardiff, the guy who got signed and died
while flying over
to finish his medical and all that shit. You just don't do that stuff. It's just off limits.
Also, be like a normal English dad. Sit in your chair while your two fucking, like, you know, 10 and 12 year old boys yell cunt like crazy at fucking players.
Yeah.
That's the normal way of doing things.
But it's also,
right?
It's not even just that, which, yes, that's true and that should happen. It's, remember I told you about that Sunderland fan that was writing some diatribe about the Swiss owner of the club and how they've been neutral and why in 1147 AD they didn't fucking help during the crusade and because they're neutral cunts or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Just like, how far are you going to go back to talk shit? Really, the cleverest you can be? Like, you've said this about fat jokes.
Right.
That's cleverest you can be is a plane crash?
Yeah. That's the best you can do?
Come up with some good banter.
I mean, honestly,
with some hashtag bants, dare I say.
You could just look across the way and go, you're frauds. Tell me I'm wrong.
Just look at the team.
Yeah.
100 million, Anthony.
Yeah.
That's a better joke.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a bunch of fucking frauds.
He scored 4 goals this season. A 25 million pound a goal.
He'd be like, we may not be in the Prem next year, but you ain't going to be in Europe. Like, you could say so much shit.
Anything.
Don't bring up fucking people who died,
but why?
Man. Don't bring up tragedies.
Just don't make any sense.
Just don't be a cunt.
Just don't be a cunt.
It's not that hard.
That's what it boils down to.
Really not that hard.
Easily doable.
Alrighty, boys and girls, that's going to wrap it up. Next up is DU Does the EFL. We're going to stay live here if you want to stick around and watch them. League 1 and League 2 have figured out their playoffs, and
nice.
The championship is starting to take form on who's doing what, and we come up to the last game of 887 games.
Can't wait.
And then after that, it's going to be injury time. We're going to preview the weekend's action. We're not really talk about fantasy because we're this week's
still
going
done
on.
Because Thursday counts for this week for some reason.
Yeah, and then we're going to go ahead and talk about the beers that we're drinking. Sam, should somebody want to find injury time, how do they go about doing it?
It's very easy. I will stick my leg out for this cab ride. It is patreon.com/DU Football Show. Just sign up to that one very affordable $5 tier per month, and you get everything we do extra. That is injury time, as Sam's alluded to there. Our preview show, you get sound check, which is our actual sound check. Sometimes you hear it, sometimes you don't, which is fun. But you always get the file that's yep. there. Just could be 16 minutes of silence. We don't know.
Yeah.
Could be us catching up from our regular lives.
Could be 9 hours of silence if it was injury time.
And it's all the hidden tracks.
Mel's doing some art house shit.
At least Shore Billy didn't call out of work that day to finish it. Because I was kind of worried about that, to be honest with you.
He's just there waiting any moment now. It's going to get good.
Hey,
he got nice and baked and just sitting there watching it 3 hours in.
Like Graham's going to yell balls somewhere in the middle of it.
Now.
So I've started taking partial gummies from a back pain.
Mm-hmm.
Bit a little too much off last night during the poker. And Carly texted me. She's like, Avery's crying. Where are you at? And I was like, I got stuck death strolling because I'm high. Sorry. Just on Facebook going.
Alrighty, everybody. Till next week.
Good night.
Born in the land of Bowie, Maryland. Bred to be a fan of fucking Everton. Punch you in the eye and drink your rye. Sam Houston. Arsenal fans have another Sam. AKA the fucking Gooner Graham. Smells of a lord. Looks great in shorts. Sam Graham.
Sam Houston.